Welcome to Unconcluded. I'm Sean Gerd. We're bringing you this episode because there's a bit of breaking news in Jennifer's case. And so that's where we're going to start and end for this episode. Basically, a new tip has come in, and a new search and a new place has begun. This episode's not going to have any editing. There was no time for planning. And really, we're running this one out a lot quicker than we normally would, so bear with us. It's Friday night, November 8th, and honestly, I don't even know where to start. About 3 or 4 hours ago, we started seeing the reports, and basically, it made us scrap the episode that we've been working on for 3 weeks, over an hour of audio, and I hit the replace button with this. But in a lot of ways, I'm glad. See, earlier tonight, news broke that a new tip had come in to the Kessie family investigator. And it has Orange County Sheriff's Department searching a lake in western Orange County. This tip was brought forward by a person who had seen the Kessie's family battle to get Jennifer's records. And their private investigator had presented it to the authorities. And basically, that's where we are with this search. The family says that the search has been 7 months in the making, which would place it coming in sometime around April. And to put that with the recent timeline, the Kessies originally filed their lawsuit against the Orlando police in pursuit of Jennifer's records in December, and they settled that case at the end of March, and as you know, they were granted their request for those records. So that means that it is possible that this tip could have also been supported by information in those files, but that's just thinking aloud. Also, based on various reports, several divers, maybe upwards of 7 or 8, multiple boats, and dozens of sheriff officers and detectives have been at the scene for the last 2 or 3 days. The exact beginning of that search is unclear, but at least since Thursday. The location of the search is the southern bank of Lake Fisher. This lake borders the Bray Mar community in Gotha, which is a community due west of downtown Orlando, just before you would get to the Ocoee area. It's about 12 miles or a 20-minute drive from the Mosaic at Millennia, which is where Jennifer's condo was. So now that we have the basics out of the way, what does it mean? And that's kind of why we're here tonight. We're going to talk through it just a little bit. Now, before we get to that, we do have some sponsors for this episode, so I want to take a quick break, and then we'll get back into it. I've got a new podcast that you need to check out. It's called Silent Waves. Silent Waves is a 7-part podcast series that tells the confronting true story of 26-year-old Raquel O'Brien as she attempts to liberate herself from the trauma of childhood sexual abuse and a father with a dark secret. She records raw and brutally honest conversations with her family as they discuss the circumstances of their past for the first time. What emerges is a larger story as they find the freedom to confront their conflicting versions of events and reconcile with their past and each other. See, Raquel O'Brien uses her personal experiences and interviews with professionals to deconstruct societal taboos. Through vulnerable storytelling, she attempts to address and heal the traumas that haunt her family, while demonstrating the power survivors hold by using their voice to reclaim their stories. She takes inspiration from the Maya Angelou quote, "There is no greater agony than burying an untold story inside you." Silent Waves was produced in collaboration with Georgina Savage, a documentary filmmaker and photographer whose work focuses on social justice issues and marginalized communities. Silent Waves was initially independently released in 2018 to shining reviews. Many survivors of abuse reached out to thank Raquel for sharing her story and empowering them to do the same. Silent Waves is now being re-released by the team at Casefile Presents, the brand new podcasting platform created by Casefile True Crime Podcast, to help Raquel's important story reach more listeners across the world. The first 3 episodes of Silent Waves will be released on Monday, October 28th, with the remaining episodes released weekly from then on. Find out why reviewers have called Silent Waves powerful, phenomenal, bravely confronting, and a must-listen. Be sure to subscribe to Silent Waves on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. So let's get back to the search location just a little bit. While it is 12 miles from Jen's condo, it's much, much closer to another location that she frequented, her place of employment. See, the location of this lake is just 2 miles from her office, and even less if you consider the route at which she would have driven to work. If you left her office and traveled east on Old Winter Garden Road, you'd pass a Walmart, you'd pass a hospital, you'd take the next right, and you'd be on the road which takes you right to the entrance to Braemar, the upscale community where Lake Fisher is. That road is basically 2 or 3 stoplights away from where Jennifer worked. And honestly, words probably don't even do it justice. If you get a chance to look it up on Google Maps, do so. I think you'll be shocked at just how close it is to where she worked. Now, the latest media reports claim that nothing has been found yet during the search, and it's not clear as to when the search is supposed to end. And honestly, I mean, the likelihood of after 13 years finding something probably isn't that great, but the hope of a new direction, that's what's really encouraging here. So of course, Scott and I had to jump on the phone tonight, and remember, keep in mind that we've barely even sifted through any of the information before this call. So we might have even talked about things that were misinformation at the time of our call, which was honestly just about 30 minutes after the information started coming out.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, what's going on?
Did you get the article I sent you?
I did. Holy smokes. That's big. It's big stuff.
Yeah, did you read the whole thing?
I did. Yeah, I had a chance to read it all. I actually read through it twice just to make sure I didn't miss anything.
So there's apparently some videos from the local news, I guess, over there too. I haven't had a chance to look at those yet, but after we're done, you might want to check those out too.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely will.
So I don't even know where to go with this. I mean, I had just scheduled the episode that we worked on to publish, and then this comes out, and so I don't even know what we do. Like, do we even publish that other episode? I feel like this is more important.
It's not ideal, I guess, but honestly, this we have to go with this.
Well, I mean, what do you think about it? Like, so they're searching a lake. I don't know. Like, I don't know much about, like, I've never heard, what is this town called? Gotha or Gotha?
Gotha. Gotha.
Like, I've never even heard of this place. Like, of all the things that we've done, like, I know nothing about it.
You know, it seems like, of course, we've been following cases like this, and it seems like this is kind of the way things tend to go sometimes. It's that out of the blue thing that you don't think about, the town that, and honestly, of all the stuff we've poured over, we've probably seen it. We've probably seen the name of this lake. We've probably seen the name, and it just didn't mean anything to us at the time because there was no connection. And I even went back through some stuff real quick. Obviously, I didn't have a lot of time, but just like quickly flipped through stuff to see if I could find through anything. And I didn't see anything. I haven't had a chance to really go through it, but I don't know. I'm still, if you can't tell already, I'm still in a little bit of shock right now at reading
yeah,
this.
I mean, I guess we probably shouldn't be jumping. I mean, we're not jumping the gun. Like, we don't know if this is really means anything. I mean, it's just at the end of the day, it's just a tip in a search, right? Like, it's not, you know, they didn't find anything. There's not like any evidence or whatever, but
right.
It's just after all this time to have something like this come up is interesting. And I think too, like, the timing of it right after they've gotten the files kind of is interesting as far as, I don't know. And I saw Drew mention that they've been working on this for 7 months or trying to get this search done for 7 months. So I did the quick math. I think that puts it back in like April or March or April or May or something like that. So right around the time that they got the files, actually. And I think in the article it said that it was a tip that came in, somebody had heard that they were trying to get the files or something and called in or talked to the investigator or something. But I don't know, the timing of like as soon as they get the files, this tip comes in, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting that they got the tip and then it was meaningful enough and there was enough to it that they were, and again, it took some time, of course, but that they were able to get the police and completely on board and in this thing enough to where you know, they think that it is credible. And the as you said, the timing of it is interesting as well. So right when they get everything, and then all of a sudden this comes forward. So, you know, I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic to an extent, obviously, with all the stuff that we've seen, and, you know, talking to the Kessies as many times as we have. I still, just for them, I hope there's something, even if it's not Jennifer herself, I hope there's something here that can build onto something else and help them continue.
All right. So look, dude, while we were talking, I just brought up the map, like Google Maps or whatever. And I typed in this lake. It's like right next to where she worked. Like, I know this, we've never heard the name of this place or whatever. And she apparently worked in Ocoee, but like this town or whatever it is, it's right next to Ocoee. Like, I'm talking like on the map. It's like, they're like an inch apart. I don't know. It's probably like a couple miles. Like once I look at the legend down here at the bottom, but like, that's crazy.
Cause we just said we didn't know where this place was. And then
it's right down the street.
So it's within, it's that close. It's within like walking distance of her work.
I'm looking at this thing
basically.
Right here. It looks like, hold on, let me look at this. It's,
send me that map.
No, I don't think, okay, I'm gonna send it to you right now. Hold on. I can't send it to you. Hold on. I don't think it's walking distance. Like it's not that close. It's not like across the street, but it's like, it's close enough that like, okay, so this thing says 1.5 miles and it's about that. It's probably like maybe like 1 mile, maybe 2 miles or so, like driving distance. Like if you did like a straight line and didn't go on roads, it's probably like less than that. But if you're driving on roads or whatever, it's, I don't see it being any more than like 2 miles.
So it's a 3 or 4 minute drive basically.
Yeah. I mean, however far that would be.
That's the extent of it. Wow.
Like
wow.
The turnpike, it's like the turnpike's like right there. And then it's like right on there. Like it is so close. And that could just be a coincidence or whatever. Like, but that's just bizarre. Like, of all the places they could be searching, and then this one's right next to her work, and we don't really know why else. I don't know that. I mean, to me, that would be the kind of connection. But I mean, it's not like it's right next door. But man, it's close.
Yeah, but that's about as close as you can get without it being next door. And I think that's probably, I would imagine at least, that's probably what has them moving on this. And it's crazy that it took 7 months, although we don't know the exact context of his 7 months statement that, he, you know, I think he said this is 7 months in the making was his exact quote in the article or something like that. So whether he means that's 7 months in the making from when they've been pouring through stuff or going through stuff or been privy to different information, or whether he literally means they've been trying to get this done for 7 months, that's how I'm interpreting it right now. And to be that close, wow.
Yeah, and I sent Drew a message. I sent him a message. I haven't heard back yet, so I don't know if he'll be able to clarify any of that for us. But, like, I don't know. This thing is so out of the blue that I don't... man, I'm still looking at this map. This is just crazy. Like, it's got to be... So, I remember in the... I don't think it was an article, but I watched one of the, like, the clips, and they had talked about back in 2006, like, when she disappeared... that the neighborhood that they're in, it wasn't built yet. Like it had been cleared.
Right.
Cleared for, what do they call that? Like cleared for construction. I don't know the word, but it wasn't built on yet. So I don't know. Like it's like an abandoned lot that somebody could drive back in on a lake. I mean, that makes kind of sense as to why that might be something interesting. But man, I can't believe it's right. Like it's right by her work.
We had to have driven by there 10 times. We probably have driven
no,
by.
No, I don't think so. Like,
you don't
well,
think so?
I mean,
well, I haven't seen the
probably,
map yet, so I don't know exactly
well,
where you're talking
yeah, I'm,
about.
I'm trying to send it to you, but I don't know if I can send it to you while I'm
recording. No, it's okay. I'll look at it after the call.
So I'm thinking that, like, we've 100% drove down this road. So like this road is the road that her job is on. Like we definitely drove down that road, but you have to turn off that road onto this other road to get to the neighborhood. And I don't think we ever turned on that road.
Yeah, I don't know that
no
we
reason
went,
to.
Yeah, I don't think we went that deep.
I mean, like seriously, if we were there. Remember that one day that we were kind of visiting the sites and we sat in that lot that was like right next to there?
Yeah.
We were doing like a call or whatever. Uh-huh. So like basically if we left that lot and it looks like we drove, I'm thinking if we drove through about two blocks or like two, I don't know what they're called, but like maybe not a block, but like a stop from like a stop
yeah,
sign
yeah, I know
or
what you're
a stoplight
about.
To a
yeah.
stoplight. It would drive to like two of those and take a right, like we'd be where this neighborhood is. Like that's how
wow.
close it is.
That's very close. Because like when we parked, we were right next to her work that day in that lot.
Right,
so.
That's what I'm saying. So it's
wow.
so crazy. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to get too caught up on that. Like, that could just be a coincidence or whatever, but that's certainly interesting to me.
Well, I think it's one of those things, you know, we've had a few of these moments where we've been sort of caught off guard by stuff, but I feel like this one, I don't know, it just feels different. And I don't mean that in like, I think that they're going to find her kind of different, but it just has a different feel to it, to the extent that it does have, there's too many, almost too many coincidences for it to be nothing. Now, again, they may find absolutely nothing, but the fact that they're getting tips now that are putting things sort of in perspective and into a cohesiveness with her work and with her and all that kind of stuff is, I don't know, it has me a little bit just flustered from trying to process all of this right now. And man, I wish we were there. I wish we were down in Orlando right now. This is just, it's wild.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's my biggest like takeaway from this is I'm just glad that it's got to the point where they could get a search together. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, look, like we, even on our podcast, like, you know, we talk about like the church and stuff, like we haven't been able to get anybody to search that thing.
No, not at all.
So, I mean, what does it take to get something searched? Certainly there must've been something behind this that was definitely worth, you know, the time and money and effort that takes them to do that. And I know that they had a search, you know, a few years back, but you know, this is the first one, at least that we've heard about, in quite a while. So, just the fact that they've gotten the files and now this is getting done, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say like new hope, but I think it's just like progress in the sense of the investigation actually, you know, having some tangible movement, so to speak, as far, you know, looking into things. And I, you know, I even saw Drew in the interview talking about like, you know, if nothing comes of this, then we're just going to, you know, we're going to keep on going on or whatever he said. I don't know. I guess it's encouraging. And exciting is probably not the word. Like, I wouldn't use the word like exciting because we're talking about like somebody is missing. But like, I don't know. Like, what's the word that you would use to say like there's like a glimmer of something happening? I don't know what other word to use.
I think sort of what I'm feeling is it is a sense of relief in a way, because the more I think about it, you're right. We did have some things that we thought were credible and some leads that we thought should have probably been followed a little bit further than what they were, if they were even followed at all. The stuff that we turned over to the police, it could have gone into you know, the circular filing cabinet underneath the desk. I don't know. I don't believe that's the case, but this feels like something's happening and there's something going on. Again, with the church, we tried a lot of times to get that area behind the church searched. Nothing ever happened with it to the point where, I don't know, I started to doubt there was even anything to it. I'm like, well, if they're not going to take it seriously, why are we? So this gives me a little bit more hope for the family. The fact that this is being taken seriously, and maybe the location has everything to do with that. Maybe they're saying it's so close to her work and the source that's coming in is credible enough to where we're going to do something. But regardless of what it is, it's just nice to know that it hasn't come to a screeching halt, because there for a while, it felt like there wasn't any progress that was going to be made. And I'm leaving the family out of it when I say that, because they're always progressing. They're always doing stuff every single day. They're never stopping. But on the other end of it, and of course, as we know now, that the police have basically removed themselves from the investigation completely. But it felt like it was almost, you know, almost to the point where it was done. And now this reinvigorates it a little bit. I feel like this is really, whether anything is found or not, I think this is good. She's back in the news now. I've seen quite a few articles. I've seen videos now, and she's getting back out there. And I think things like this are important, whether they find anything or not. I think following up on tips and actually taking them seriously is a big deal. And it adds more legitimacy to what the family is trying to do as well.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So I went on the maps and I plugged in. I know in the article it said it, but I just wanted to do it myself. So the place was like 12.2, I guess, depending on which like entrance that you drive into the neighborhood, but it's like 12.2 miles from Mosaic at Millennia is where this lake is. And then, and I'm going to the south side of the lake because that's kind of where it looks like they're searching. And then it is like 2.1 miles, driving miles, like not even walking, driving miles from her work. And it, 2.1 miles sounds kind of far, but like it looks so much closer in on the map. And I guess I think about like, if I think about like my neighborhood, like from driving out of my driveway to like the entrance to my neighborhood is like 2 miles. And I like live in a kind of a bigger neighborhood, but still like that's not that far. Like I can walk that if I need to. And certainly I'm not expecting that anybody that, you know, was doing what they were probably doing with Jennifer is walking. I mean, they probably had a car, but I still can't get over the, I mean, are we going back to start thinking about like the coworker and the manager and stuff now because of the location to her job? I mean, I don't know what their connection would be to this place, but I don't know anything else that would be around there.
It has my mind spinning now too. You know, if something does come of this, it starts to make me question where her car comes into play, because why drive it all the way back over? So it makes me think that it, again, if there is any credence to this, that she was almost, and I'm just sort of thinking out loud here again, this is so new, I'm just sort of talking and processing things as it's going, but it almost seems like she would have had to have been taken that morning or that night from her apartment complex, and then somebody, just to buy some time and delay things, moved her car, and that her car wasn't used in any way, which would explain why there's no evidence in there at all. And of course, we had thought that before already, but it would sort of even give more legitimacy to that if there is something with this, because it wouldn't really make a ton of sense to move her car back over to where it can be found closer. It seems like a just get this thing out of here, move it a few miles down the road to throw the police off kind of a thing. Or even after the fact, like, I don't know. I'm going through so many things are going through my head right now. I still just
can't buy the like moving it to throw the police thing off. That just seems so stupid to me, but I guess anything's possible. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the other stuff plays into this at all. And again, you know, like we've said, that's assuming that there's something to this, you know, this could be nothing. But, you know, we have to kind of, for right now, if we talk through it, we have to talk through it like, okay, if this is a location that is important or relevant, how does that tie into the existing information? And that's a good question. And I guess that's why I keep going back to where she worked, because that's the only place that we really know about that is even remotely close to this. And I'm looking right now, I'm on the like satellite view. There's like big houses in this neighborhood. There's like million-dollar houses. It's like, this isn't like a dinky neighborhood.
Well, I hope that we have to figure out a way to tie this in to the investigation. Meaning, I hope there's something to this. I hope at the end of the day that we have to now put another location in there and try to figure this out, because that would mean there was some success with this.
Well, I mean, I hope that the investigators are doing that, and certainly.
Right. Well, of course. Yeah. Like, I don't mean when I say we, yeah, of course, we're not the ones investigating it from the professional standpoint of it at all. But for the family's sake, I hope there's something there, and I hope that it's enough to really lead them in some sort of a direction so that they can get their footing with it. I know they just need one little thing to go right for them and to go in the right direction for them to really steer this thing in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think that the fact that this is happening is good news regardless of the outcome, because it means that even if there's not something found here, there's more avenues on the horizon for them to continue looking. So for sure. I mean, this is good news. Any way that we look at it as far as progressing the investigation into, you know, ultimately finding Jennifer.
Right. That's the end goal, of course.
Yeah, 100%. So I guess, I don't know. I think I'm going to cut the other episode and just go with this. I mean, it's not going to be as long or anything, and it's going to be rough. I'm not going to have much time to edit or anything, but I think this is like timely and relevant. So, I mean, you on board with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. And if we decide to revisit the other episode and maybe even tweak it, obviously now, I kind of want to see where this goes.
We're going to take one more quick break to hear from our second sponsor for this episode. And then I'll get into where we go from here. Did you know that as many as 9 out of 10 Americans don't eat enough fruits and vegetables? Kenko aims to change that. With 100% organic instant smoothie that delivers 2 of your recommended 5 daily servings. Using advanced freeze-dry technology, Kenko captures all the goodness and nutrition of organic fruits and vegetables, including the fiber. They don't add sugars or preservatives, and there's no need to freeze or blend. Just shake with water or milk, and your smoothie is good to go. There's 9 functional flavors, but my favorite has to be the Golds, which is full of protein and made with cacao and goji berries. I just mix it with some cold water, and it's ready to go. There's nothing like the convenience of getting 2 servings of fruit and vegetables when you're on the go. It's easy to travel with, and you can bring it to work or on vacation or really wherever you're going. One of my favorite things is how easy it is to save time, and that there's no annoying cleanup of a blender. It's just trusted organic ingredients in a sustainable package that is great for people like me that just find it hard to get lots of fruits and veggies into my diet. Kenko Instant Smoothies come direct to your door on a flexible subscription plan with free standard delivery. You can customize your flavor selection for each box, and the first one includes a free shaker bottle. Each smoothie costs less than $3, and first-time customers will get 10% off their first order when they subscribe by visiting kenko.com, that's kenko.com, and using promo code UNCONCLUDED at checkout. Again, visit kenko.com, kenko.com, and use the promo code UNCONCLUDED at checkout. So where do we go from here? I think that this is a new starting point. It's a place for us to jump in from where we left off in our breadcrumbs episode. The locations of searches in relationship to Jennifer's disappearance. And we see if there's any more puzzle pieces to put together. So we're going to head down that route, but there's something else that we can already start thinking about tonight. See, we talk about all the time how amazing all of you out there listening are. And we really do consider this a joint effort with you. And tonight is a perfect example of that. Within hours of the search information coming out, we had a listener who prefers to not be named, but we've consulted with this person in the past, and they brought us some interesting information. Now, before we get to that, this is purely for the sake of discussion. We have not looked into this at all beyond the basic information that we had available tonight and that this person provided to us. But it is yet another example of the strange things that occur in this case. We thought it was interesting enough to share, and something that we plan to follow up on as we move forward. Back in December of 2005, an individual purchased a condo at the Mosaic at Millennia, which is where Jennifer lived. Now, we believe this person still owns this condo to this day. And we also believe that he was living there during the time of Jennifer's disappearance. Now, there's a lot that makes this guy an interesting character, including some pretty disturbing legal and business issues. But that's not what piqued the listener's interest. When the location of this week's search in that Braemar neighborhood came up, the listener made a connection to this individual. Not only does he own a condo in Mosaic, which he still owns, and we believe lived in when Jennifer disappeared, but he also purchased land right on Lake Fisher. In fact, right where this search this week is taking place. We're talking within feet. And so maybe it means nothing. But if nothing else, it's very odd, and it's quite the coincidence. What is the likelihood of someone having residences in both not only the location that Jennifer disappeared from, but also where a current search is going on? certainly strange, and we think something that might be worth following up on. Now, we don't know what this tip was that came in, and that could possibly change our thinking here. And if we get any more information on that front, we'll be sure to let you know. But I'm sure, as you can imagine, this information had me dialing up Scott for the second time tonight.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, what's going on?
So, I don't even know what just happened. So there's, you know that guy, and you know that guy Mike, that we talk to occasionally.
Yeah.
That
has,
mm-hmm. That, you know, he does some deep research and whatever. So he sent me a message and he's like, "Hey man, call me ASAP."
Okay.
And I was like, "Well, I'm kind of busy doing this other stuff, right? Like this, you know, the search came out and whatever." But he's like, no, it's about that. Like, call me." So I'm like, "All right." So I called him, and I don't even I don't even really know what he told me right now. Like, I just got off the phone with him 5 minutes ago, and I'm still kind of figuring out what he told me. So basically, he's been looking into people who were residents at the Mosaic at Millennium.
Yes.
So he's been doing that for a while, and he's just I don't know, more of a research project to figure out who lived there and, you know, who they were and what they were doing at the time of Jennifer's disappearance. Well, anyways, there's this guy who he's actually talked to me about before.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived at Mosaic at Millennia. He bought his condo there in 2005, December of 2005.
Right.
And so he says he's sure that he was living there when Jennifer disappeared. So obviously in January 2006, it had been shortly after he bought it. He's living there. That makes sense. And this guy has apparently always been on his radar as a seedy character who mm-hmm. lived at the Mosaic and whatever. And there's a lot of stuff, and I'll spare you for right now. We could talk about this another time, but there's a lot of stuff that this guy, criminal past or internet, stuff about him being kind of a not good dude.
Right, right.
But anyways, beyond that, so he lived at Mosaic at the time of Jennifer's disappearance. So it's okay. And, I'm waiting for this guy to okay, so what's your point? He's like, "Well, this new search came out and I started looking up the area and he remembered from some, he did property searches on all these people, I guess, right, to try to figure out where they lived or whatever. And so this guy that lived at Mosaic that was a real shady dude and has a lot of stuff going on, he has a property that he owns that is on this lake.
No way.
Not the lot they're searching, but I'm talking
the area, though.
You could spit onto his yard from where they were searching.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, it doesn't mean anything, but that's freaking weird. Right? The guy lived where Jennifer lived when she disappeared. And now he lives on a lake that they're searching. That's so weird. And not only that, but apparently he owns two pieces of property, right around this area. So the one is the one that's right on the lake. And then there's another one that's 500 feet away or 500 yards. I forget what he said, but it's close. It's walking distance to the lake as well, but it's undeveloped. It's just a wooded area. And then the one that's on the lake has a house on it. But I mean,
wow. Does he know how long he's owned?
What in the world?
How long has he owned the properties?
Yeah, I don't actually know. I don't actually know when he bought those properties. I don't know if he knows or not. I'll have to check with him and find out. That's a good question.
Yeah, check with him and see. I'm just curious on the timetable of that.
But I don't, I just can't, I mean, I feel like it should be nothing. I mean, it's just happened to, have a, but again, it's I don't know. It's like that old thing. There's these two particular locations that are potentially tied to Jennifer's disappearance. And this random guy has connections to both of them. That's a red flag to me. I don't know.
No question. I'm like I was earlier. I'm just trying to process all this because I was not expecting that.
Well, me either.
When you called
I like me either. I was like, well, what is so urgent that he needs to talk to me? And then he said that, and I'm like, wait a minute, what? And then, like, on one side of my brain, it's like, okay, well, that means nothing. Like, that's not that important. And then the other side is like, that is a bizarre coincidence that I keep thinking about. Like, that's really weird.
It means nothing in a vacuum by itself. But when you start piecing it together with everything else, I think it at least has to have some sort of meaning. At least that's what my brain is telling me right now. And
well, I mean, I feel like at the very least, we have something that we need to start looking into.
Yeah, for sure. No question about that.
You know, and it's weird too. Like, okay, so the condo at Mosaic was purchased for like $275,000 or something like that. These houses in this neighborhood are like $1 million houses. So, I mean, what's this guy doing in his life where he's like upgrading his house times five or six, like within a matter of years? Like, that's, I don't know.
Yeah, and what like, was he, too. Did he just have the condo? Why
he still
did he
has
have the
it.
Condo? Yeah.
I think he still has it.
And
so he's not even selling. I don't know. I don't know what this, it's interesting to say the least.
Well, it sounds like we have some
anyways,
work to do.
I wanted to let you know because I thought it was so crazy and
nah,
I don't even know what to do. Like,
I
don't even have time to process this right now. Like, I don't even know what it means, if it means anything, or like, I can't even think about it because of all this other stuff, but what a weird thing.
No, I'll give you a call later on and or something, and we'll try to get into this more in depth. I know we both got to run. We sort of just caught us off guard.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Let's definitely circle back and talk more about this.
All right, man. All right. I'll see you.
All right. See you later. Bye.
Well, things are moving quickly tonight. In the course of just recording this episode, some new information has come in. The end result is apparently that they did come up empty-handed. This is from a WESH2 report. The family also said that the area being searched was open land back in 2006, and they had been searching the area for days when their own private cadaver dogs alerted to something. It was at that point that the Kessies decided that they needed to call the authorities. They deployed dive teams and canine units, and ultimately, as I mentioned, they came up empty-handed. Drew Kessie said, right now we're exhausted, a little bit distraught, but you know, we're people who move forward. The Kessies also said that this was just one of many leads that they're currently working in the case, and that they're still getting hundreds of tips. Now, I told you that this episode probably wasn't going to be long. Honestly, we're still trying to process this and see what connections it may have to our past investigation. But the best takeaway here is that the private investigation, or the private investigator that's working with the Kessies, is making progress. And that's just a welcome change. So we're going to continue to work on this episode. Maybe it becomes sort of a living episode in the sense that if more information comes to light, we'll continue to update it here. Maybe not a new episode, but maybe we just expand this one. Sort of like an article that might be on a news website. It gets added to over time. So it's possible we'll do that here as well. So if things come up, we'll add it, and we'll make sure that you know it's been updated. Now, there is so much running through our minds and so many new things for us to think about, but that's going to be all for right now. We've been on this for about the last 5 hours, and to be able to digest that information and record and release an episode, I mean, you guys can probably tell. It was rushed, but we wanted to get it out in a timely manner. So we're going to stay on it both here and over on our social media pages. And in the meantime, we'll also be reworking the episode that I pulled down and release that in the near future once it's been updated. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for participating. And if you think you may know something about the disappearance of Jennifer Kessie, it's time to call the people that are actually moving her case forward, her family's private investigators. The line to reach them is 941-201-4009. The time is right now. Music in this episode is by PC3, and we'll see you next time. This is a replay of the breadcrumbs episode for your convenience. Jennifer was reported missing on January 24th, 2006, and it's that day that the search began, even if not officially. Jennifer's own friends and family combed the area around her condo, Mosaic at Millennia, and also that of the nearby mall, the Mall at Millennia. A few days later, after her car was discovered, just over a mile away at the Huntington on the Green, search parties would begin searching wooded areas by the Huntington complex and in between there and the Mosaic at Millennia, Jennifer's building. Police also reportedly searched storage closets in the back of Jennifer's three-story building and the scrub pines and brush at the back of the Mosaic property. Among the first media reports of searches for the missing 24-year-old was a Local 6 news report of a search on Monday, January 30th. As stated in the Local 6 report, police officers searched a heavily wooded area near the location where Jennifer Kessie's abandoned car was discovered, and a scent was picked up in the area. The reporter stated, "One of the two strongest clues that the Orlando Police Department is sharing with the media is the scent was picked up in the woods." And the report also made note of the search being continued from the previous days. Then, according to a later Action 6 news report, officers on horseback continued a grid search Wednesday, February 1st, for Jennifer Kessie. That Wednesday, teams of police officers and sheriff deputies were searching areas inside the boundaries of Texas Avenue to the west, Orange Blossom Trail to the east, Oak Ridge Road to the south, and Holden Avenue to the north. It is reportedly the fourth day in a row that officers had searched on horseback for clues. In the same report, it was also stated that police began what they were calling a new grid search, based on tips that had been coming in. Sheriff's deputies with the mounted patrol had jumped off of their horses and over a fence along Texas Avenue just off of John Young Parkway after a citizen had called in a tip. Meanwhile, over the first weekend in February, members of Child Watch of North America had been assembling volunteers at the Mall of Millennia and coordinated a massive search of the areas around Jennifer's condo and the Huntington on the Green. By February 7th, 2 weeks after Jennifer's disappearance, police were still on the hunt. On that Tuesday, they searched an abandoned hotel on Vinland Road. The abandoned hotel was slated to be demolished, and police had a cadaver dog check all of the rooms along with Orlando officers. However, it turned up nothing. The next search was reported on Sunday night, February 12th. Based on a sighting at a boarding house, a tip was called in that the police considered credible. They descended upon an apartment at 1414 40th Street. The location of this home was just 2.6 miles from the Mosaic at Millennia. And in fact, if you were to drive directly from Jennifer's condo to the location of this home, you would turn and drive directly past the Huntington on the Green on Texas Avenue. The location is owned by an individual with more than 20 arrests on his record, and the location of this home is in a seedy area with apparent drug activity. "We had information that she was seen there and that she was seen alive and was being held against her will," Police Sergeant Richard Ring said at the time, continuing to add, "Detectives working the case interviewed that person, and that person apparently gave them enough information to make them concerned." Further record shows that the SWAT team searched inside the structure but did not find Jennifer or any sign that she had been there in the past weeks. Later, Sergeant Rich Ring would conclude by saying, "The results were negative. She was not in the residence, and we are interviewing people there to see if there's a possibility that she might have been there, due to the fact that it was credible, because this is what we would expect if it was our family member. We acted appropriately, I think." It was shortly after this that the detective on the case was making statements that the Jennifer Kessie case would come to a conclusion by the end of the next week. However, he didn't mention why and said that that would hurt the investigation. They claim to have very viable evidence and mention that part of the investigation involves tracking down names and locations of transients. Of course, we can now say that they clearly oversold their hand. The next reported search took a bit of a different turn.
I believe she was abducted at the mobile station on Kirkman and L.B. McLeod. That somebody climbed in the back seat of her car and held a knife to her throat.
So we believe she is in a pipe around here.
Specifically, she says Jennifer's down a waste management manhole off L.B. McLeod Road.
An Orlando police detective tells me they have searched waste management here based on Giono's tip. They've even drained a retention pond. So what did they find? Apparently chicken bones and a whole lot of sludge. They say they are willing to search this area again with new concrete evidence. Jennifer Kessie is actually here.
Sergeant Ring would make a statement about the search. The psychic calls we have been getting about the Kessie case, we are not discounting them. There is the possibility that there is valid information we can use. Detectives at that point had received 12 calls from people who identified themselves as psychics. Sergeant Ring would continue. There is also the possibility that a person who knows information about the case, who is reluctant to use a regular channel to communicate with us, might actually go to a psychic and give us tips that can help us find Miss Kessie. So early on in the investigation, detectives were even using information from psychics to help them find areas to search. The next known search wouldn't be until nearly the end of 2008. On October 10th, 2008, Texas EquiSearch arrived in Orlando to conduct searches in the wooded area off of John Young Parkway near Mosaic, which had been searched in 2006 as well. The team actually had arrived to look specifically for Kaylee Anthony, a 3-year-old child who was missing at the time, but they were also briefed on Jennifer Kessie. Ultimately, nothing would come of the search. We now fast forward to June 2009.
Well, Martha, this is the area where Orlando police, with the help of an independent search team, looked for any trace of Jennifer Kessie. This is the corner of John Young Parkway and Millennia Boulevard in Orange County. And this search came about because over the weekend, the same independent search team came out here with canines and radar equipment and found a possible area of interest in this field. This is about a 15 to 20 acre area that we're talking about. They found this area of interest. They contacted the lead investigator in the Jennifer Kessie case right away. And that's why today, this afternoon at 1:30, Orlando police came out here to try to look for any trace of Jennifer Kessie. But police are telling us that search has come up empty. They are happy, though, that this search team contacted them first. They say they're relying on these people who have tips or independent search teams to come forward, give them information, and then they together will do a proper search. But again, this search this afternoon here in Orange County has come up empty, but police are saying this in a way gives them hope that they will find Jennifer Kessie alive someday possibly, and they're saying they want to keep those tips coming. They want to keep this case out in the media. Jennifer Kessie was last seen 3.5 years ago at her apartment complex, which is not far from here. So this area of Millennia Boulevard has always been of interest because of how close Jennifer Kessie lived to this area. But again, the search in this field behind me today has come up empty.
As you just heard, this June 2009 search was initiated by an independent search group who had asked Drew Kessie, Jennifer's dad, if there was a specific area he thought maybe they should focus on. Here's more of what he had to say.
Correct, yeah.
And what were you thinking in the back of your mind?
Well, it's easy to get rid of a body is what I'm thinking. If you have loads of dirt coming in and you have heavy equipment, filling in half of a lake and you have flattening of the ground so they can build condos that never got built, it's easy to get rid of. If you ask me, you keep bringing dirt in and you're filling on top and on top and on top. It just seems prime to me, and really the property is connected adjacent to Jennifer's property in the back.
The summer of 2009 lent itself to several searches related to Jennifer's disappearance. Just a month later, in July of 2009, roughly 60 experienced searchers, including firefighters, police officers, and canine handlers, headed out from a command post on John Young Parkway and L.B. McLeod, near First Baptist of Orlando Church. At the time, Drew Kesey was quoted as saying, "What it's made up of is basically six or seven groups from around the state of Florida. They're total professionals, and we're not even bringing volunteers for this. It will be strictly a professional search." The search started on Saturday morning, and searchers were working by ground, boat, and air, looking in the areas near Jennifer's condominium, Orlando International Airport, and Ocoee.
After long hours in the heat, the two-day search for missing Orlando woman Jennifer Kesey has ended. Throughout the weekend, her parents and search crews looked for any sign of Kesey. As West 2's Danielle Bellini reports, even though this weekend turned up nothing, the search is far from over.
Jen's parents, Drew and Joyce Kesey, want peace and closure. But until that day comes, today, they have the support from agencies across the state, and that support is hard to miss.
You have a lot of people that have no motive other than the passion in their heart and the willingness and the desire and the training to want to try to help.
Ultimately, again, after a search, the 3-mile radius around John Young Parkway turned up no answers. And so the frustrations of over 3 years of hunting, searching, and looking with nothing to show for it would continue.
During the past 4 years, the search for a missing Orlando woman intensified this morning. Jennifer Kesey vanished from her condo near the Mall at Millenia in January of 2006. Every other search for the 24-year-old to this point has failed to find her. But West 2's Dave McDaniel live now where this new search is happening. It's near the intersection of OBT and Oak Ridge. So, Dave, what led police search teams to that area?
Well, they're really only saying that they've had a tip that takes them to this area. Now, they point out that they've had 1,000 leads since her disappearance, but obviously this is a tip that they believe is very credible. We want to zoom in and we want to show you the area that is central to the search. We can tell you after talking more extensively with police and actually talking with Jennifer's father that cadaver dogs came in here, dogs with a good track record, and they have hit on this area. And that's exactly why the search has intensified. Dozens of searchers combing the area, digging with a backhoe, using ground-penetrating radar, all hoping to find the answer. What happened to Jennifer Kesey back in January 2006?
They are doing what we've done before, based on information that we believe to have been credible, what you call a dig. They're using some ground radar units, and we've got several agencies out here, and we have taken in over 1,000 leads. I can't say any. I do not have any specific information about what it is that led the investigators to this area. I mean, the Kesseys want to know what happened to their daughter, and so does the Orlando Police Department, and so does everybody in the whole country.
The tip that led to this search came from an unnamed informant, and we suspected it must have been big because police spent the entire day searching this field. But it eventually fizzled. And we must update you too. Scott and I had planned to actually visit this particular search site on one of our recent trips to Orlando. But when we arrived, the entire place was, well, a little bit different. It's now the location of a giant Walmart supercenter, with the ensuing parking lots and other structures. What remains of that field search back in 2010 isn't much. Here's the wrap-up audio from that search, but be forewarned, the audio quality isn't the best.
Well, unfortunately, they did not. You know, earlier today, we were told that this entire field might actually yield some clues as to what exactly happened to Jennifer Kesey. In fact, an area on the other side of the field was their target. They really thought that they would find something there. But any hopes of a conclusion in this case vanished after about 5 to 6 hours of looking. It was shoulder to shoulder at one point, 60 people across. The emergency response team looking for any hint to where Jennifer Kesey might be. but it was one specific area that got the most attention, a backhoe to get into and under the soil. Much of that soil was sifted to see if there were any of the tiniest clues. Even ground-penetrating radar was used. Jennifer Kesey vanished late January 2006. The 24-year-old has not been seen since. There had been other searches, but cadaver dogs had made cops think this tip was better. It wasn't.
We did what we wanted to do out here, and we didn't find anything of evidentiary value as it relates to Jennifer Kesey, or really anything else.
We wish we could have brought Jennifer home. We've always said for the good or the bad, and we wish we could have brought Jennifer home today.
We're strong, and we are committed as ever to continue in our fight to give Jennifer the best chance to be found. She deserves that.
The next major search for Jennifer Kesey would take place in 2012. More than 100 officers searched a wooded area off of International Drive, just north of World Center Drive, with a command center at the Partners Federal Credit Union. The investigators had been waiting to search the area for about 6 months, but there was originally too much water covering the ground.
Breaking news first at 4, a new search has just concluded for a local woman who's been missing for 6 years. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Payne.
I'm Aixa Diaz. Jennifer Kesey vanished in 2006. All day, teams have been scouring a wooded area in South Orange County, hoping to solve a case they deemed exhausted 2 years ago.
Now, Chopper 2 was over the search area. Today's search required a massive effort to cover a massive area. West 2's Dave McDaniel has been following the search teams all day. And Dave, where exactly are you and what brought the searchers there?
Well, we are basically about 3 or 4 miles south of SeaWorld on International Drive, a part of International Drive that a lot of people aren't all that familiar with. We're very near World Center Drive. The investigators came here because they had a tip that this area might have some clues to Jennifer Kesey's disappearance, and they said when they got that tip, the area was too wet. Only now is it dry enough for them to get in and investigate. On ATVs and on horseback, a swarm of emergency responders with machetes. This 800-acre wooded area was too wet to search when the tip first came in. Orlando police tell us they're not even sure when the tip came in, but once they determined the site was one which could be searched, they sent in more than 70 people. Canines to see if they could sniff out any clues, boots on the ground to see if any evidence can solve this mystery. And unfortunately for the Kesey family, the Orlando Police Department just released that the search has concluded and that nothing of significance was found. But still, both Drew and Joyce Kesey came out and spoke with us just a few moments ago. Both of them thanked the Orlando Police Department and all of the members of law enforcement for their continued search and asked everybody in the community to keep Jennifer Kesey in their thoughts.
That would be the last search until December of 2015. And this would be one of the first searches that took place outside of Orlando. The search was conducted at the Sands Key area of Biscayne National Park, within a short driving distance of Miami. Orlando detectives had worked with the National Park Service to lead a land, air, and sea search of the island. But ultimately, again, no answers. And that pretty much wraps up the known search locations related to Jennifer Kesey over the years. But there's one more thing I want to talk about while we're on the topic of searches. But this one is a search that may not have been done. As we followed the breadcrumbs of these previous searches, the greatest concentration of activity is in the area of Jennifer's condo and the Huntington on the Green. And of course that makes sense. Those are the known locations. But even more specifically, there's been some particular street names that continue to pop up as reference points for these searches. John Young Parkway, Orange Blossom Trail, and Oak Ridge Road come up time and time again. And it's that last one, Oak Ridge Road, where Scott and I have spent some additional time over the past few weeks.
So when you first walk up on it, like from the street, which is obviously where I parked over there by the church, it's a lot of grass and fairly high grass, and then there's some trees, but then it gets really dense after that. Like it's thick, like you think of sort of Florida, in Florida, you know, the with the high grass and, you know, maybe swampy back there. I'm not sure, to be honest. I didn't really go venturing too far back into the dense woods, but it gets thick and it's like overgrown and everything. So that's basically that entire area back there. I think for people to understand that, and it looks a lot bigger to me, at least being there, it looks a lot bigger than what you would see on the map as far as the area goes. So I think, yes, it would be very easy to conceal pretty much anything you'd want to conceal back there. There, you know, there's houses over to the side, and there's a short fence. You know, it's a normal-sized fence. And obviously this is 11 years later, so I don't know what kind of fencing was there back in 2002. I didn't see anybody except I saw one person at the, come out of the church door. That was it. That's all that I saw the whole time that I was up there.
Was they came out, like, in the back, like by the woods, or where were they in the church?
No, they came out the front door. So actually, as I was walking back up, somebody came out of the front door of the church. So the church, the back of the church sort of butts up to the woods. So if you came out of the front of the church, you wouldn't necessarily be able to see anything. But if you kind of came out maybe one of the side doors, the back doors of the church, you'd be back there by the thick wooded area. But this person just came out the front door, sort of saw me, and then I got back in the car and left. This is right as I was leaving, actually. Yeah, because I could see her porch from the near the wood line. So that tells me that she would be able to see the wood line from her porch. So, yeah, absolutely, I think so. And, again, I don't know what kind of fence there was, but even with a six-foot fence like this one was, you could still see, because the porch was up a little bit, and I could see where for sure, you know, I could see like the door, the top of the door and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely. It's an interesting, creepy kind of a place. You can tell people don't go back there very often. I mean, it's an overgrown, and in Florida, you know, anything that's overgrown like that and might be a little bit mucky, you don't go in there because of water moccasins and spiders and all sorts of other creatures and stuff. So it looks like a place that's not gone in very often. I could see at night this being a really creepy place at night, because it's probably pitch black back there behind the church, the woods. I could see why somebody would need their headlights to be able to see anything, basically. And even during the day, it just sort of had an eerie type of a feeling when I was there. I didn't stay very long just because, you know, like I said, I got sort of back there by the wood line and, you know, just made sure that the line of sight was good and everything. And then I sort of ended up getting out of there after that. But it's if you were going to dump something and you needed to get rid of it, this would be a place to do it.
So why are we spending time in these woods? Well, because of a phone call several weeks prior.
Far as I can remember, is I lived on Wingate Drive in Orlando, not far from Jennifer Kesty. One night, I was my children were little, and we don't smoke in the house. And I was excited. We were watching movies on cable. I got up to go outside to smoke a cigarette. It was dark. I can't remember the time. I noticed two cars outside. At this point, I didn't know about Jennifer Kesty yet. So I see two cars, and one of them spotted me and started flashing his lights into the woods. There's like a church there, and behind the church was like a woods, a bunch of trees, looked like the woods. But Oakridge, you know, we don't have woods. But anyway, he started flashing his lights, like warning somebody in those trees in the woods. There was two cars there that night. One was Jennifer Kesty's at the time. Like I said, I didn't know it was her yet. And then next to her car was another vehicle that I couldn't see because her car first and then the other vehicle was beside her car. And since it was nighttime, I couldn't see. I got a look at the gentleman that was there, and he was a tall, slim guy with a ponytail.
At some point after she'd noticed the car just outside of her backyard, she saw one of Jennifer Kesty's flyers with the picture of her car at one of her kids' schools.
So I took the flyer down, and I came home, and I told my husband, I said, this was the car that was in the backyard. And he looked at it. So I called the hotline number. And they didn't really do anything. The following day, they sent helicopters out. And that was the last I heard of it about that. But that was her car. Nobody ever approached me. Nobody. My husband at one point told me to mind my business because the guy looked over towards our house. And at the time, I had two small, you know, babies. Little ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I did call the hotline twice after I saw it. but never got a response back or nothing. And at one point, I had pulled over because I seen her mom, Jennifer Kesey's mom, and father on John Young Parkway every weekend with their signs, help find Jennifer. And I had told them what happened, and she just told me, call the hotline. And I did, but I never got anything. Nobody ever came to my door. Another, we moved since, but the guy was tall. He had a ponytail, and he was slim. And there was another person, but never got to look at the other person. Because he was flashing his lights into the woods like he was warning somebody. There was two cars there that night. Somebody had to have driven the other car. That was Jennifer's car. Okay. I am 100% positive that was her car. The only thing that I have clear in my mind is that night when I saw the individual. Actually, when I opened my door, he looked over, went into the car, like not his whole body, but just to reach in to flash those headlights. And at that point, my husband told me, mind my business and shut the blinds. So I didn't get to see anybody else.
The other car was behind her car?
It was beside her car, not behind. It was beside. Like, it was Jennifer's car, and then right next to her car was another vehicle, but I couldn't see the other vehicle. I couldn't tell you the color, what kind of car it was, because it was beside it. Because he looked over. So I turned on the porch light, my porch light in the back, but not the backyard. The light was off. I turned it on to go outside. But when I saw him look over, and, you know, he was flashing his light, I went back inside to finish watching a movie we were watching.
Yet another ponytailed man, just like the one we heard about at the Huntington on the Green. And I don't like coincidences. But let's set that aside for a moment and talk about the location of this apparent event. This woman's house was on Wingate Drive, which is directly off of West Oak Ridge Road. Just a few homes off, in fact. The backyard that she describes in her audio overlooks a small wooded patch directly behind the Oak Ridge Baptist Church. There's more of like a grassy patch with a few trees, and then it gets more dense. For those of you unfamiliar with this part of Orlando, the location of the event is less than 3 miles from Jennifer's condo, just 2 miles from the Huntington on the Green, and for those of you that remember the sighting at Northbridge Apartments that we have yet to confirm, it's less than 2 miles away from there. In fact, Millennia Boulevard ends and dumps right into Oak Ridge Road. You heard the witness mention that she heard or saw helicopters, but this particular area was never specifically mentioned in a search and does not fall within any of the search boundaries that we're aware of. So, could the helicopter she heard have just been from one of the other searches that was going on nearby? Or was it not even related at all? It begs the question, was this location ever actually searched? And if the answer is no, it's pretty clear what needs to happen. I actually asked Jennifer's dad, Drew, if he knew specifically about this location being searched. He simply said that it didn't sound familiar. Of course, he said the areas around there, as I've already mentioned, were well known and searched pretty extensively. But this particular location wasn't searched to his immediate knowledge, and to ours either. We couldn't find any evidence of this actual location having been searched. If you're listening and you know that this location was searched, please let us know. But right now, we're operating under the assumption that it hasn't been. And so that's something that we need to figure out how to get done. Now back to the ponytail man for a moment. We can't forget about him, because this is now the second time that we've talked with someone who says they've seen such a man linked to Jennifer Kesey. The first was a woman in the parking lot at the Huntington on the Green, the day Jennifer was reported missing. Now a man with the same general description is seen in the woods with a car that a witness believes 100% to be Jennifer's black Chevy Malibu. What are the chances? If a ponytailed man had been spotted with a girl that looked like Jennifer both times, maybe we could chalk it up to being a lookalike. But this particular woman didn't see him with Jennifer. She saw him with what she believes was her car. And to us, this is important and can't be discounted. At this time, it's a lead that we consider credible and we feel needs followed up on. I said a moment ago that I don't like coincidences, and the ponytail is something I have a hard time overlooking in that sense. But based on what we know about the statement from the woman at the Huntington on the Green, that she believes she saw the man with the ponytail and Jennifer on the afternoon of January 24th, and the only time frame that this event behind the Oak Ridge Church could have taken place, if in fact it was Jennifer's car, would have been the night of January 23rd, makes it very difficult to put them together as related. So maybe in this case, a ponytail man is just a coincidence. Because if the night of January 23rd, behind Oak Ridge Church, a body was being disposed of, how could that same person then be in a different location, live and well, later the next day? Of course, that doesn't make sense. Now, there are other explanations. Maybe Jennifer wasn't with them behind the Oak Ridge Church. Maybe there was a disposal of cell phones, or getting rid of the briefcase or the other items that Jennifer had that night. There's probably several different avenues where we can reconcile both events into a single narrative. But what's the point? We don't know for a fact that Jennifer was actually involved in either one of these particular events that we've heard about from two separate witnesses. So why are we trying to force them together? One could have to do with this case, and one could not. Both could have to do with this case, or neither. At this point, we just don't know. But what I do know is expecting to put everything into a neat box is probably not going to happen in this case. Because if everything went into a neat box, would we still be looking for answers 11 years later? The point is, we're not to the point in this investigation yet where we can start crafting a narrative. We're still putting things out on the table. And so today, we put a new location on the map. As I previously alluded to, it's possible that police investigators have searched the property. But until we know that for sure, this is a priority. There may be nothing there. Perhaps because there never was, or maybe because the witness you heard from spooked the man and his accomplice away. Either way, it still needs to be looked into. Because there's a chance something's there. And that's something that we're working on now.